We've been programmed to think that once somebody dies, we have to grieve. We have to feel very sad. And if you don't feel very sad, if somebody dies, especially like the closer the person is to you, the more you have to be sad. And if you are not, you're going to be judged by the others, because how can you not be sad when this person that you love so much now is away?
Welcome to the Self-Defined Human podcast. I'm Michael Corman. This is a podcast about meditation, radical acceptance, music, art, and what's right and wrong with yoga. Today is a conversation with my friend Fabienne Egger. She teaches yoga in Switzerland, and we're going to talk about a lot of interesting things. We'll talk about yoga. We'll talk about how that relates to music. We'll talk about why human beings have a hard time getting close to each other. We'll talk about fear of heights, bullying in school, Black Lives Matter, and I hope you enjoy it. Okay, so, hi Fabi, welcome to the podcast.
Hi Michael, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you. This is the second time we've had this conversation. The first one, the audio didn't work. Okay, so we have to do it again. So we're gonna try to trace our steps exactly.
I'm gonna give you exactly the same answers.
Good. I've spent the last 2 days carefully rehearsing everything that we did last time. So we're gonna talk about. We're going to talk about yoga, okay? Right? This is. I want to talk about this fuck yoga video that you made. Okay, that's the thing that was like I saw you, like I met you on Facebook group for online marketing, social media marketing, and and you know you look to me like a normal yoga teacher, like you had all the normal stuff up there on your Instagram. The handstand pictures, the nature landscapes and everything, right? And so, but then what happened was I saw you started posting a picture of dirty dishes in your kitchen.
I did.
Okay. Yes.
Yes. Dirty dishes.
That was when it was like, okay, it's like, this is sort of interesting, right? Like this is not what you normally see. It's dirty. It's not this fake positivity that you see everywhere. Okay.
Not the typical pretty Insta post. Yeah.
No,
definitely not.
And then came out the fuck yoga video. Okay. And that's when I said, like, this is somebody that I need to pay attention to. Can you just like say like, what is that about? What led to that?
Well, to be honest, I don't exactly remember which video that was, but fuck yoga. I tend to say that because so many people come to me and tell me how they would like to start practicing yoga, but they're not flexible enough, or that they're not strong enough, or not calm enough, and whatever not, and that they cannot start practicing yoga because of all of this. So they then feel that they're missing out on the benefits of yoga. I don't know if that makes if that makes sense at all, but what I want to try to say with fuck yoga is you don't need to do sun salutations or handstands or headstands or downward facing dog, any of these things, in order to practice yoga. So it's a fuck yoga in the sense of fuck yoga how it's sold to the modern human being, basically.
Right. So it's about the way it's not yoga itself that you have the problem with. It's the presentation of it, the way that the marketing or the whole.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. So how did that come about? Like why? Like so you teach yoga in Switzerland, right? And that's. I say you're a yoga teacher, okay, but that's only a small part of you, right? Like that's not the whole picture of who Fabi is. But
yes. Yeah. Yes. And I think it's also like the title that I like the least, being the title, called yoga teacher. Yeah. Because it puts me in a box and it gives like people, like, it puts pressure on me to fit a certain picture that people have of me.
Mm.
And I don't like that because I'm not. I'm not all peaceful and all calm and all perfect all the time, you know?
Right.
And that's what I have the impression people expect from a yogi, from a yoga teacher, especially, that we're always calm, that we're just always peaceful, and we never eat meat, we never harm anyone. We're always sitting in meditation, practicing yoga 2 hours a day on the mat. It's not that. It's not that.
I found it is really validating for me. Like when I, cause you know, I've done yoga, for a little while, and I'm not very flexible. Okay. It's like, it's not for me. It's not, I can't do the poses that you see in the books. Like I can't make myself.
Neither
look like
am
that.
I, neither am I, even though people will consider me flexible. I still definitely don't feel as a bendy yogi.
Mm-hmm. So like that was,
so how does that make, how did that make you feel? Sorry. Yeah.
How did it make you feel? With you or?
No, with being like, with practicing yoga and not feeling flexible enough.
Yeah. Well, see, there was two parts of it, because on one side it was difficult. Like it was hard to be in a yoga class, like knowing that I'm not doing exactly what the teacher is saying to do. I'm not doing what everyone else is doing much of the time. And so that's like, that was really frustrating. And I felt very self-conscious about that. On the other hand, it was also like, cause I had this intuition about what I should be doing and what was working for me and why I was doing yoga. And so I had that sort of like that drive inside me to do it a certain way. And like I kind of had my own agenda, my own reason for being there. That caused conflict though, because it's like I don't want to have to explain that to the teacher, you know, every time I go to a class. And it's just that kind of social thing. It's like that was uncomfortable for me. So okay. I found it to be validating when I met you, and you were saying, you know, that like as a yoga teacher, as somebody who, from my perspective, was a representative of that culture. Okay, that you were saying, you know, you had the same, seemed to have the same ideas that I did about that.
Yeah, definitely. I'm wondering, like, when you say you don't want to justify yourself every time to the yoga teacher, did you ever have to justify? Like, did you go to a yoga class and then ended up doing your own thing, and the teacher coming to you and actually putting you on the spot that you were doing something wrong or something that wasn't appropriate?
I never had a teacher.
Like, what was the experience?
I never had a teacher get angry at me or anything like that, but I've had teachers that were clearly uncomfortable about it. Even in the sense of just like giving me extra attention, coming over to me, you know, over and over again, you know, trying to correct what I was doing,
trying to help.
Trying to help. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah. You know, because I could sense that it's that the teacher's getting uncomfortable with that. And because, you know, I know how teachers are. Like,
totally.
teachers want to feel like they're doing a good job, and they want to see a class, you know, they want to see everybody doing.
And at the
end
of the day,
they want to see everybody happy.
Yes. Yeah. And they want you, like, they're there to help you, right? Most of them. Mm-hmm. Most of them are teachers because they want to help. And you're preparing, like, for me as a yoga teacher, I prepare a class, or I used to, I don't anymore, but I used to prepare classes very like deliberately. And I had like an idea behind the class and about like where I want people to go. And so of course you kind of like go and try to make sure that the person really understands what you were saying, because maybe she or he completely misunderstood what you meant. So I don't know, as an unexperienced teacher, if the person doing something completely wrong does it because they didn't understand the idea behind my cueing or my teaching, or if it is just because that's where their body wants to go right now. So it's kind of like a little bit of a tricky situation in that setup, I guess, especially with a teacher that's less experienced, because then they just see that you're not doing what they think you should do, and they're not open enough to see that maybe even what you're doing is just the right thing for you in that moment. And a lot of us have learned specific like poses, how they are meant to be and how they're meant to look. And it's very closed-minded often, I find, in the 200-hour yoga teacher trainings, that, okay, your knee needs to be right above your ankle, and if it goes a little bit beyond, then it's like the person is going to injure themselves over time and things like this. So there's a lot of fear, I guess, also, and insecurity behind a new teacher of like keeping everybody safe. So yeah. But for me, I eventually moved away from this more and more, and just like, I want people to feel good in my yoga classes. And especially if it's just an open like yoga class where people come to relax, to connect with their body, to strengthen their body, to find some connection. For me, it's always like the invitation, move your body as it feels today. Like, take me as a guide on a safari, basically. Like, you choose where to look out of the window. You choose how close you're going to go to specific animal maybe at some point. Or like, so, and you can stay behind the group a few times and then catch up again eventually. So really giving the permission to the student to do what feels good for them in the moment. And over time, if I see a person doing something weird over and over again, I might go up to them in a private setup and ask, like, hey, like, yeah, what are you trying to achieve there? And how does it feel if you do it? And then I can maybe give them some better understanding about their body and about the mechanics behind and stuff as well. So yeah, but I totally feel you when you say it's like, it feels weird in a yoga class to do something completely different. I definitely experienced that from a student's perspective myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I think it's weird. It's weird to not to do something different. It's also weird to do the same because, you know, look, I know, I can see the other students in the class. Like, they might not, I don't know how aware they are of what mm-hmm. they're feeling in their bodies, but like, in order to keep up with, like, they're all moving at exactly the same rate, yeah. like supposedly breathing at all the same rate. I don't buy it. Okay. That's not happening.
No, there's no way that everybody can, like, nobody has the same, like, breath capacity, lung capacity on that sense. And right. especially usually the capacity of the teacher and his or her pace is much longer because they're experienced. They have a bigger lung capacity than most of their students. Mm-hmm. So you just end up like, yeah, either holding your breath for whatever long to like just right. conform because yeah, no, but it's true because, and I've done that as well as a teacher because we've been taught to cue like a movement, like one movement on an in breath, another movement on an out breath, and that's just how it's supposed to be. But we're not we haven't been like put to the awareness that certain people might just take two breath cycles for one that we do in one, and that's completely and totally fine, especially at the beginner level, even to the intermediate level, you know, of the physical practice. Like, just takes time to open up the body enough and to expand the lung capacity to that degree that you can really move slow and precisely with the body and only do one breath at a move.
Right.
So, yeah. And I think then people tense up because they feel like, oh, I'm not supposed to breathe out right now. I'm supposed to breathe in. And if I breathe out now, then I'm doing something wrong and I won't get the benefits of yoga. I'm just saying, no, it's not about that. Yeah.
And the teacher is not doing what they're demonstrating, what they're saying they're doing, because you know, they're telling you to inhale. Okay.
Yeah. While they're talking and exhaling.
Right. And everybody's trying to copy their movements.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Another thing is that I found, like, you know, the whole body's connected, right? So it's like, you know, you tell me to move one part of my body in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, there's something else going on somewhere else. Like, it's not like it has, I can't do exactly what you tell me to do because, look, I don't know. There's something, you know, I move my arm this way and who knows, like I shift my balance and now like my ankle doesn't move that way. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like that can throw the whole thing off.
Yeah.
You know, just going by the pictures in the book just seems like that can't work for me.
No,
I mean, I see the same thing in piano teaching. It's the same issue, you know, especially with beginner teachers, that they don't want to hurt their students. They don't want to, you know, they want to do it by the book. They want to, they want it to be correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they do that because they mean well. So mm-hmm. you can't really blame the beginner teacher really to do those mistakes, right? So I don't know how that, like in the music industry, how it is, but what I see in yoga is that there's like, by now, especially, there's so many yoga teachers out there, like so many people that call themselves yoga teacher. Like me, when I first started teaching yoga, even though I didn't really meant to, or didn't really mean to, 5-6 years ago, when I just finished my teacher training after I just literally started practicing yoga, like a month before I did my teacher training. So that by itself is already like such a weird thing for me. Like, I didn't do the teacher training because I wanted to become a teacher. I did my teacher training because I finally found a teacher that sort of brought yoga in a way that clicked, and that I knew, like in that one yoga class that I took with this teacher, I knew like, I want this. I want this in my life. And I don't just want to consume it. I really want to be able to understand it and live it. And yeah, so one event led to the other. And then eventually she announced that she's hosting a yoga teacher training, or I think she even sold it primarily as a yoga immersion / teacher training, making sure that people are not intimidated by this word teacher training. And so I got in contact with her and I asked her, how it was and if I, just as a beginner yogi, can do that. And she totally encouraged me to do it. And it was a really good choice. Yes.
Wait, can I just clarify? You had only been practicing yoga for 1 month when you did this teacher training?
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, or 2 months. Like, I've had an eye on yoga for maybe a couple of years. I've tried yoga in different yoga classes in Canada and also in Switzerland, and it just never clicked. Like, all the yoga classes that I went were somewhat too like, I don't know, spiritual maybe at the time. Maybe I was just not ready to receive the message yet when I went to those classes. And then I started buying magazines and just, going after the pictures, practicing a lot of headstands because I thought that was cool and it was fun and I was able to do it. And I was interested in the crazy moves. Like, that's what really got me into yoga basically as well. So it was like the contortion stuff.
Right.
And then I went to Worcester for a whole winter season, and I somehow I just found that yoga class and it clicked. It was a yoga class. What was it described as? Yoga for athletes. And it was in a gym. It was really like not a nice spiritualish room. There was mirrors, there was bicycles and like all the stuff that you have in a gym. And all the people were like such fit people. And I was intimidated as fuck. So me being who I was or who I am, I really like did my best to make a good impression next to all those strong, balanced, lean bodied people. And I was struggling. I was struggling so much in that class. I was sweating. And I think there was a lot of stuff moving through me at the time anyway already. And then with all of this happening, with the release at the end and something that the teacher said, just like exploded some emotions within me and made me promise myself to yoga, basically, I think. Yeah. Yeah. And then I wanted to understand it. And so I decided to take this immersion / teacher training. And it was a really good experience. I learned what yoga, I learned what yoga was essentially about a little bit later, but I started getting at least all the ideas and all like the bigger picture of what yoga was, that it wasn't just about fancy poses and things.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where did we left? Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me about this teacher training. So you had only been doing yoga for a couple months. You were basically a beginner. You were doing this.
I was complete beginner. Yeah.
And you had this idea about yoga that you wanted to learn these contortion poses. You wanted to, it was an athletic thing for you.
Yes.
At the time.
Okay. Yeah.
And then after that, okay. Like now you're saying things like, well, people's bodies are different. Everybody's in a different place. And okay. So tell me about the teacher training. Like what did you learn about teaching there? Like, did you learn how to deal with like what was, I want to understand that.
Yeah. So what you learn in a 200 hour teacher training is really to how to set up a pose for the perfect picture or the perfect position eventually for the body, from the ground up. You look at the feet, you look at the, like all the joints, and you build it from the ground up and just make sure that everything is right in place. And it's very scriptured, basically, which I guess makes sense at the beginning, you know, like you have to start somewhere eventually. But with the people that you practice teaching, is like not an everyday normal teaching setup, because the people that you have around you are all usually more experienced yogis already. Like most people that participate in a teacher training have practiced yoga for some time, right? So I don't think it's the norm that people just like hop right into teacher training when they start practicing. But yeah, so you learn on bodies that are already naturally able to do certain things. They have the body awareness to know exactly where to put their stuff. and they have certain awareness of what a body can do and what feels good and what doesn't. But then you finish this teacher training and you come out and eventually teach your friends or your family or strangers, new students, who are like so far away from the bodies that you've been working on in the studying setup that you are just either completely lost and admit it, or you pretend that you know your thing because that's what the book says, that's what you learned, and you're going to make sure that this person that you're teaching is doing exactly this because everything else is wrong. So they're going to hurt themselves if they do anything wrong. And this is the dangerous part, I think, because then you you're not looking at a body, you're just looking at a pose and then trying to fit this body into this pose no matter what. Whereas it's the opposite that we should try to do. It's not about the pose eventually. It's really about seeing a body, knowing what you're trying to do, and then slowly working up to that, bringing awareness to the person about their bodies. So for me, it's like more about how like teaching a student how they can move their body and what would be, let's say, normal-ish, like a normal, healthy, functional range of a joint compared to maybe a limited or rusty kind of joint that needs a little bit more attention, you know. But then it's not to put that joint into this position instantly. It's about like years and years of practice to like eventually, hopefully, get there again. And that's what we don't learn in a 200-hour teacher training. So like, yeah, so for me, really, the 200-hour teacher training should just be an immersion, just as I took it. And it shouldn't give the people the confidence to go out and teach public classes with, and especially all level classes, which is like the most difficult thing to do. Like, imagine you being a piano teacher, having a complete beginner who's never had a keyboard in front of their hands in the same class with somebody who's already, I don't know, playing freaking Mozart or I don't know.
Right.
How are you gonna curate a class that serves everybody's needs? How would you do that?
How would I do it?
Yeah.
Are you literally
that's
asking me?
Yes. Do you have an idea? Yeah. Like, could you imagine?
Well, look, that's tough because everybody's coming to it from a different perspective, and it's not just a matter of the skill level, but it's a matter of the values and the like why are they even there? It's going to be different for somebody who's just starting off versus somebody who's been doing it for a while.
Exactly.
So that's to me is really the biggest issue.
Yeah.
You know, in music, you know, like I'm a big fan of doing basic exercises because to me it's like at the advanced levels, the only like the problem is always in the fundamentals anyway. Mm-hmm. It's never like so you can still do the same type of work, but it's that's tough. You know, everybody's different.
Yeah. And everybody starts from a different point. Everybody's why is different as well. So that's why I find it a little bit sketchy sometimes really in those public classes when like most of the times you have a teacher that just only did a 200-hour teacher training and that maybe potentially understands their body well enough so that they know what feels good for them, but they don't have the awareness and the understanding what might cause pain in somebody else's body, even though it feels super, super good within your body. So, yeah, I don't know. So I think that's where the whole teacher training stuff is going wrong in the yoga industry.
Yeah, when you started, like, did you have the idea that you wanted to be a teacher?
No.
Like no. When did that happen?
Well, so I did my teacher training and I came back to Switzerland, back home, and had to move to a new town because I didn't have a home. And then I was here trying to like find this same kind of community vibe of yogis and this flow type of yoga that I got to know there. And there was literally nothing in the area at the time. There was maybe 3 or 4 people teaching some kind of yoga, which was definitely not the style of yoga that I started appreciating when I got started. So I realized that in order to get that community, I needed to start creating it. So I needed to start teaching my friends and people the stuff that I've learned so that then they might like get more interested in yoga as well. And then we can start building like this community. And I knew that I'm not able to teach them what I've learned in the teacher training because I did a power vinyasa yoga teacher training, which was, a lot of focus on rather strong poses. There was always hand balances as well and handstands and all that kind of stuff. But I knew this is not what people were looking for here. And that's not what people needed. And that's also not what they were would be able to do. So I made it like super easy. My first class, I remember, it's like, oh my God, this is going to be so boring for everybody. But it's like, nah. So I taught it anyway. And it was still so difficult for so, like so many moves were still so difficult for a lot of the people. And that got me thinking, you know, so I started implementing what I've seen in that class and adapting it in the next one and adapting it in the next one. And I, since 5 years, I think I'm breaking down yoga, breaking it down. And I still feel like I'm breaking it down for the people. Because the way our bodies are moving through everyday life is just, yeah, it takes a little bit more care to go to those poses that we sell as yoga poses nowadays. And eventually, yeah, again, it's not about the poses, right? Yoga is, it's about more.
Yeah. So when you did your teacher training, you did not have the idea that you wanted to be a teacher. This is just to get more immersed in yoga, to learn more for your own practice. Yes. That's it. That's weird to me. That's like, because like, I've heard this from other yoga teachers, okay, that they've done teacher trainings without ever intending to teach. Like that to me just sounds very strange because I've never heard about that in any other field except for yoga. And it seems that that's the very easy thing to do, I guess, or something that they like.
Well, it's just there's nothing in between, right? So there's you have public yoga classes. Like just random classes. Maybe you find a teacher who does like a course set up and you might be able to dive a little bit deeper. But most of the stuff that I see out there is just public classes, drop-in classes. You just come whenever you feel like it and you just like you get random bits and pieces, but you never really learn to understand what the practice is all about. Mm. Then you have maybe master classes or special classes or workshops where you might learn a little bit more, but it's just that much that you can learn in a 2-hour master class or in a 2-day workshop, right?
Yeah.
So, and that's the thing. So that's what I mean. There's like this gap. So between this and the teacher training, there's basically nothing.
Yeah.
So that's why I feel that the 200-hour teacher training should literally just be an immersion. It should be something that anybody can take without feeling the pressure of having to teach eventually, to deepen their own practice, to understand like the mechanics and the philosophy behind as well, and to start seeing this amazing, huge spectrum of what's possible and what's available in yoga and be able to create your own classes as well. So I think that was a big thing that I took from the teacher training, like being able to start building a yoga class according to my own needs at a given day, at a given time, whatever not, without having to find a yoga class that taught exactly what I was looking for at the moment, or to go on YouTube and trying to find what I needed at that moment. So I can really go onto my mat, tune in with myself, see what I need, and then just start moving my body and checking in with my body and start getting into this meditative flow of movement, breath, connection. And so that should just like 200-hour teacher training should just be an immersion for that. And then once you practiced for yourself like this, and you might even like start, you might even already start practicing in a very unique way, like developing your own style of yoga. Then you go into a teacher training, which would be the 300-hour teacher training that they're doing now, where you really go deeper into the philosophy, where you really start looking into the more connected ways of how anatomy, like how your body works and the, all of this stuff, right? And then maybe you can be a beginner, a beginning yoga teacher, and then do another 500 hour, I don't know, so that you can then be able to teach beginners. Because beginners are the most difficult thing to teach.
Right.
It's not, but usually it's the beginners that we start teaching as soon as we get out of a teacher training.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I really don't understand this whole system, how they build up these curriculums for the teacher trainings. And, but I think, I feel there is a movement happening, and people, like, I'm not the only one who sees that this is a problem, obviously. So yeah, I think sooner or later there will be more or new regulations and a new system, hopefully in place to, yeah, to deal with this issue.
Yeah. I want to talk more about the videos that you've been putting up videos. Like, I've been doing this too. Okay. For months now, I've been doing it, 6 months or so.
Mm-hmm. The random talking videos.
Yeah. This has been a big thing for me. Okay. It's really been transformative. Like, being able to put this stuff out, these opinions that I put in these videos, short videos, 1 minute, some of them are a little bit longer, but it's just like, you know, it's like being able to express something really, really important to me, and in a just a way that it's very public, and it's like that has been very transformative for me, and I've seen you do the same thing, and that's really cool.
Yeah, it's helped me a lot to feel comfortable in front of people.
Yeah.
And I think that's one thing that I'm really grateful for, that I kind of like had to start teaching yoga. So before I was not comfortable speaking in front of other people, and especially not telling them what to do or suggesting them what would be the best thing for them to do. So I actually started recording myself even before I met Random Talking Videos, but for the purpose of teaching. So I would just teach the classes on video and then do the class with myself to see how it sounds, how it makes sense, and just how the pace was as well for somebody practicing along. And then at some point, I think it was one of my yoga teachers, actually. It's her that comes to my mind when I think of my first experience with Random Talking Videos. Her name's Ray Indigo, and I've done teacher training with her as well. And I just saw her doing more and more of these videos, and I was, first it was like weird because she's just talking random shit on Instagram, and I didn't really get it. And I think at some point I saw this hashtag Random Talking Videos, and I ended up somehow in this community of people doing that. So I figured, like, oh, maybe I can actually start speaking, yeah, my voice as well. But I think that came much later, where I really, now that I'm thinking, like, really putting speaking videos out there, I think hasn't started until like a year ago max, or even less, where I really feel comfortable speaking about topics that I know people might not even get, or people might disagree, or people might be triggered by it. And that's been fun. And you've been a big part of that confidence as well, eventually, I think. Like, seeing you speaking whatever is just like on your mind and not giving too many fucks about what people say was definitely encouraging me to do that. And it's been interesting.
Well, that's cool.
Yes.
Like, I, you know, it was, I mean, watching you do that, like, just since I met you, which wasn't that long ago. I mean, I think it was probably in April or so.
Yeah, you keep saying February, March, something there.
Yeah. And like you know, you were doing like, it's talking about normal yoga things. Okay. And then there was then with the fuck yoga thing. Okay. You had this video, you said fuck yoga. Okay. Like, I think you were nervous to post that one, but like, that was like, wow, that's a lot of personality right there. Okay. And yeah. then it turned into something else. You were talking, you know, you were doing meditations on death, and it was just like getting really interesting. Like, and mm-hmm. that stuff, like, it's not this like fake toxic positivity you see everywhere. It's like real and honest. And that's, like, that's what people need to be seeing.
Well, yeah, I'm guilty of that toxic positivity as well, because it's just what we get into contact with when we start that journey of yoga, I guess. I don't know. Uh-huh. Like, so one big part for me, or one big learning curve or teaching, whatever you want to call it, was this practice of positive affirmations. Because when I started practicing yoga, obviously I wasn't in a good place. Most of us start yoga because we're not in a good place. I was definitely not in a good place at the time. And I was dealing with a lot of insecurity, a lot of like negative thinking, and and all of these things, like not feeling worthy, not feeling pretty, not feeling good enough, all of this. And then I found this practice of positive affirmation. So just push those negative thoughts aside and start replacing them by positive ones. And what the practice would be is just like you sit in meditation, whatever, not, or you can write it, like journal it as well. It's just like saying, I am pretty, I am worthy, I am enough, I am this, I am that, I'm that. And I did that, and it just made things worse, and it made things worse, and it made things worse. I think it was until I found the work of Dr. Joe Dispenza, or at least it was with him that I finally understood the message and the key to the whole positive affirmation thing. What I learned there was really that if your brain, so let's say the thought of I am rich or I am pretty doesn't resonate with what you're actually feeling, then you're creating more and more of a gap. You're creating incoherence within your whole being. And that's what's happening when you feel not worthy, when you feel not enough, when you feel not pretty or not rich. And you know that it's true because I know I have no money, so I know I'm not rich. I might have some weird issues on my face, and I know that I'm not pretty as you would portray pretty. What else? Like, you know, like all these things. So you know in your core, you know it's not true. And then you try to convince with your mind, you're trying to convince yourself that you are. And you just like your whole body just goes bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. Anyway. Right. And then Dr. Joe Dispenza gave me a bridge with wouldn't it be nice if. So I started saying, wouldn't it be nice if I could feel pretty? Wouldn't it be nice if I could feel worthy? Wouldn't it be nice if I would feel loved? All these, like, it's just sort of like a bridging. Because if I say that, of course, like there's every cell in my body goes, fuck yeah. So there's like, there is an elevating feeling happening in that moment, even though I know I'm not that yet, but it would feel really good. And this creates a positive, uplifting feeling in my body. And this brings me more and more to this I am position. And eventually by now I'm in so many ways I can really say I am, and my body goes, yes, I know.
It sounds like when you say, wouldn't it be nice if, like, there's something about that acknowledges the fact that you're not there. So it's, there's something, mm-hmm. that's something that's validating about that. Because yes. you're not just insisting on something that isn't true.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Totally. And I feel that this must be true for many others as well. Like, it can't just be me that fell into this deep hole with positive affirmations, right?
Oh, I think
and
it's
I'm sure there's
common.
People that yeah. it works, but probably not for everyone. So I really feel that it's important for me to share this experience with people so that they then don't feel even less capable because they're doing all they can. They're doing all these positive affirmations every day, at least 3 times. And yet they still don't feel better than they did 3 years ago. They actually feel worse. And then they don't know what's happening and they feel even less worthy and they feel even shittier and they feel even more incapable and more unloved and all that. Like, yeah. So this is how I learned what toxic positivity means, I guess. And I feel it's really important to put that out there because it's not about pushing negative. And like, what is negative anyway? Like, who decided that negative is something we're not allowed to have, right? Like, we're beings of polarities and this world is like, it runs on positive and negative, but not in a good or bad way. It's just need both the yin and the yang, day and night, the feminine and the masculine.
What's the deal? Yeah.
Haven't gone that far into history yet, but I definitely know it's like, it's a language issue.
Uh-huh.
Or like, not language issue, but how we define things.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's the language, it's the culture, it's all of it. It's like, that's just, you know, from the time we're kids, we're given these messages and that's what we think of as being the ideal. That's the state that we want to be in. You know, we want to be in this perfectly positive, you know, just high all the time.
State.
And it just, that doesn't work. And people get very frustrated trying to do that.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, I can imagine like, that's the people who go to yoga. Like that's,
yes.
That's like, that's, you know, yeah,
and that's what the whole wellness,
the affirmations
and, uh-huh. And that's what the whole wellness and yoga industry does. We're selling this idea, this utopian idea that if you just practice yoga enough, you are going to always, you're going to feel happy and balanced and good all the time. And this is a misunderstanding because that's not what yoga is about. Yoga is about, as you said, acknowledging that there is both parts and not feeling like not feeding one over the other necessarily, and also not trying to put one into the dark corner or even like close out, but to let both have their space. And I think that's where the whole, like the negativity has such a bad reputation because we keep pushing it away. So it keeps coming up like stronger and stronger, and of course it disturbs us more because we try to put it away, we convinced ourselves that finally I got rid of this negative aspect of myself, finally I got rid of these negative thoughts, and right now I'm super happy and everything is good and yoga is awesome and all the people around me are awesome. But then something happens, and I like to see it as a visual of me either pushing the bad thoughts like a ball down underwater or just out the door and just closing the door with my hands. And the longer I hold that door closed or that ball underwater, the more of this negative energy is going to come, or these negative thoughts are going to come. And at some point, it's just going to be so strong, I can't hold it any longer. And it's just going to flood me. Right. And the longer I hold it away, the stronger the impact will be if it smacks me eventually. So
I like that image of the ball underwater. Like that's cool. Because that's what you're doing. You're putting all your energy into keeping this thing down under the surface so that you don't have to see it. But you're putting energy into that. Like that's something that's costing you something, and you're eventually gonna get tired it's gonna have to come back up.
Yeah.
Is it you, like when I started yoga, like that wasn't why I started yoga. Like I wasn't coming from that mindset. Okay. Cause I was kind of already in a place where I was seeing things like that, but that is why I started meditation. I would say was to try hold on to positivity, eliminate negativity.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I get it from that point of view. But that's interesting, because like that's probably why I was so frustrated with yoga, because I was thinking like yoga is going to be like, this is a form of physical exercise that gets it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like they understand what they should. You know what I'm trying to do here. So,
and yoga does, but your teachers might not, uh-huh. because well, they, yeah,
they're not, they might not, not have perfect.
Gone through you know, that. They're not there yet. And that, yeah.
So you must have had a very messed up childhood, I have to say. Like, just I don't know the details, but like you've gone through this, right? Okay. I'd be curious to know something about this.
Holy, okay. You just like let me pop that ball right out of the water. How much time do you have?
I don't know. Whatever. So, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Like, what do you want to know? Like, yes, I had a messed up childhood.
Yeah, like, let's hear a story. I want to hear an interesting story, something that's going to be kind of juicy and something that is, going to really get a sense of why Fabi felt the need to turn to yoga in her darkest hours.
Okay. Because I think I saw the opportunity that yoga has, the tools for me to deal with all of this stuff that I kind of like never really had the opportunity to deal with. I'm coming from a rather picture perfect type of family. When you look at the beginning of the family, I would say, my parents, like to the outside, must have looked like perfect. But there was a lot of things going on under the surface, and one thing, and that has to do with the death meditation and the fact that I'm considering death just as much as like just to have as much value as life itself, is the fact that my mom is an alcoholic, and she always did her very best that she could, I guess, to take care of us. Maybe too much, because she didn't take care of herself in that sense. I am pretty sure she does not know up to date why she has the issue that she has. I have a feeling that I do, because I've learned some stuff from her. Before they got me, I was the first child, and there was many incidents where my mom was like falling downstairs, or found like at the train station, fell with her bike, like very close to the train tracks, that she got hit by cars because she fell in the street, and like all these kind of like things. There was one incident where I found her like at midnight or sometime in the night when I woke up, like full of blood in the kitchen, on the kitchen floor. And there was like a lot of glass around. And it was actually the glass jar with the sweets, which she hid a lot, like very high up in the cupboard. So I guess she kind of like wanted some sweets and tried to like get them and let it fall, and then she sat down and decided to fall asleep in the in the mess. And I woke up and I found her like this, my little brother and my sister in bed. I obviously felt that I needed to take care of this, so I got her into bed, cleaned up everything as good as I could, and so just this fact that I never knew whether my mom is going to die just like one day because she's just too drunk to figure shit out was why I started considering her dying on a regular basis. So how, just to make it like a normal thing so that I wouldn't freak out once it would happen, because I knew it's going to happen one day.
Yeah.
It still hasn't. So I'm still dealing with this, still dealing with this, yeah, with this fear eventually. But so I started to, not meditations, but just visualizing and thinking of this. So I don't know if this is something that brought me into yoga, you know.
But, well, yeah, no, but you were, it sounds like you were thinking about deep things like that.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, this is definitely one thing.
I don't think most kids are doing that, right? Like just imagining what it would be like if their parents died. Like just to contemplate the meaning of
that. I hope not. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Hmm. That's one of the messed up stories, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good one.
And I think, you know, I think it's important. I think it is important to visualize things like this and not in a bad way, not to feel like it's not that I am wishing this upon my mom. I just take facts that can happen. And I mean, anybody could do that, because even with a healthy mother, with a healthy father, brother, sister, you never know if that person is going to come home tonight or if you're going to see that person again. And we tend to just not even go there with our thinking, because we then feel that we are maybe calling it up and make it happen. So if it would happen, then we would even blame ourselves because we were thinking that this could happen.
Oh, yeah. That's I've heard that from a lot of people. Like, yeah. I don't even want to think about it. Or, you know, yeah, that they'll,
yeah,
when those, like, things happen, they'll say,
it's,
you know,
it's fact. Like, yeah, it's fact, right. But it's not fact anymore, right. In today's world, because everything is so safe, right? Like, especially in Switzerland, I would say, like, even here, people get shot. Even in this town, people get shot. So we do have these, not often, but has happened, I think, 4 years ago, some family drama. They weren't Swiss though, so it wasn't a Swiss family, but
okay,
still,
that's good.
And it can happen.
Where were they from?
You know, like, people freak out. Am I going to be racist if I say that now? But no, it's facts, right? They were Portuguese.
No, I don't want to hear it. Okay, never
it's
mind.
A Portuguese family. And we have lots of Portuguese. In,
okay, Portuguese.
In
I know. You got to watch out for the Portuguese.
They are very, very lovely people. Oh. They're very lovely people. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, but again, like, we people are messed up and people don't have the support system sometimes to deal with the pressure that comes onto us. So I can see how these kind of things can happen. Like, I'm trying to put myself into perspective of, like, what would need to be in place in order for me to do something like this. I don't see myself doing it, but I can see how somebody else could be so lost with, like, what's happening, the whole pressure that's been put onto us,
yeah,
and
yeah,
the lack of support systems that we have, like real support systems that are giving us the tools to find the mental stability within ourselves as well when we end up in tricky situations.
I know, it's crazy, isn't it?
Yup.
Let's talk about, see, another thing I noticed about you when I first was looking at what you were posting, it's like you had these, like, really extreme physical activities, okay? Things that I would never ever do. Okay? You're doing, like, I mean, and now you're into paragliding. You had this picture, you were slacklining. Okay, so you're like, I don't know what this was. It's like on this, some sort of wire, okay? Like really high up in the air.
Yeah, slackline.
I mean, this is terrifying to me.
That was very terrifying to me too.
But you seem to be attracted to these things. Like, what is that? Is that, would you say it's terrifying?
That was terrifying. Yes. Mm-hmm. high lining or slack lining in high altitudes, or high altitudes, no, but like way above the ground.
Yeah, heights, yeah.
Yeah, is something that I don't know why, but has been a reoccurring dream of mine. That I would walk on a high line. And I have a big fear of heights. So it's kind of strange that I have this dream like coming over and over and over again.
Yeah, it's a little strange to me.
And so I started slacklining just above ground, so safe, about 6 years ago, I think, or 7 years ago, 7 or 6 years. And I've been walking, practicing slacklining for a long time, but just casually, occasionally, never like super crazy, or I never really had a goal in slacklining. But then at some point, I started realizing that I have this reoccurring dream. So I eventually decided to make it a goal of mine to walk a high line by the age of 40. So I gave myself a lot of time, because I'm not the type of person anymore, maybe I used to be, I definitely was, who felt like once I want something, I want it now. But I'm more realistic now. And I also know that it's more about the journey and what I can learn to get there, rather than the actual walking on the high line, even though I know this is going to be, it's going to be such an amazing feeling. Because what it is for me is, if I am able to walk a high line, I know that I have managed to get that connection that, I don't know if it's mind control, I don't know what these things are called, but I can put myself so much into alignment with me and the line, and basically like just, yeah, fusing with everything that there is without having to fear of falling. Of course, you're always attached. Like even if you fall, you're going to be held by the strap and your harness and everything. So it's not that I'm going to fall to death. But just walking on it, I know will put me like so much in the zone. Like I can almost not imagine how that's going to feel. I can just almost imagine how it's going to feel. And I think it's going to feel amazing. And so I've been practicing heights ever since. Like I've started like slowly building up through climbing, through bouldering, through working in ropes courses and doing safety courses and stuff like that to really feel safe with the equipment and everything. So I've already like learned so much on that process, or in that process. And yeah, so then the picture that you've seen was my first time actually ever being in presence of a high line. Like I've never been right on, like I've just seen it on pictures. And right there I was under the bridge with a couple of people. They set up the slack line. And I attached myself double securely with a rolly, with a pulley. Like I wasn't walking that line on that day. So for me, it was really just already like getting this feeling of being so high up above ground to be in contact with the line. And yeah, it took me 15 minutes minimum. No, I think it was almost 20. To like really get over the edge of the bridge pole. So yeah, it was a big mental game.
So you weren't walking. You were, yeah, but yeah. I mean, so this is a mental thing for you. Like you want it, you want to be able to find that. Yeah. you want to find that mental state. I want to understand.
I'm really curious, like what makes me so afraid of this, or what does it take for me to shut this off? Like to
understand the fear.
No, because the fear I have.
Yeah.
I, I want to understand why I'm not able to not fear.
Hmm.
No. To not fear. To feel confident.
Okay.
Why do I fear, even though I know that I'm completely secure, that there's nothing that can happen?
Right.
Because I know the equipment, I have the trust, I know that there's literally nothing that can happen. Well, there's always that 1% chance that something's going to snap and it's going to break, but we're not going there, right?
Wait, is it 1%? Is that the chance?
I don't know what it is, but okay. There's always a chance. So yeah.
Cause I personally, like, that would not sit well with me. Cause I wouldn't trust the equipment, right? It's like, exactly. I'm that high up in the air. Like I would assume that this is going to be the time that it's not going to work, you know? Like, there's a reason that I'm here on the ground and, you know, I don't have wings, right? Like,
is there?
I don't know. I think so. If I were supposed to be high up in the air, I think I would know how to fly. I mean, technology fail. I'm not trying to, like, scare you. I don't want to put
humans fail. Technology fails. Evolution fails at times. Evolution fails.
All the time.
Like, yeah. So yeah, no, like, and I mean, you, of course you say that because you haven't worked with the equipment. You haven't seen, you haven't built trust with everything that goes around. Like we're talking here six, seven years of like working with my fear of heights already and working with the equipment and doing these safety testings. And I've seen how much load one of these carabiners can take. And mm-hmm. I know it's not going to snap because of the weight of my body falling into it. So yeah. And that there, of course, there's always like an element of you just got to trust that today is not the day that you're going to leave this experience, you know?
Right. Right.
Yet always being aware that today could be the last day.
I could imagine if I did trust the equipment, you know, and if I knew there wasn't a real danger, but I still had that fear, like I could see myself wanting to explore that because that's, you know, that's a real experience. And it's something that, I mean, who knows what would be on the other side of that.
Exactly. For me, it was tears, but tears of joy that I was managing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
But see, you could just start in a safety setup with in a ropes course. I'm pretty sure you guys have that over there as well.
Probably. I don't know. Yeah. Is that something with
like that's that, like would, a that, tourist that, attraction here. Anybody can do it. Little kids do it. Uh-huh. Old people kids, do it. normal adult people do it.
But you know, when I was a kid at summer camp, there was this wooden tower that you could climb. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how high it was. It looked like it was a mountain when I was a kid. Okay. But it was, and you know, you had all the ropes and everything and it was set up. So it was safe apparently. Okay. But I was mm-hmm. the only kid who was too afraid to even attempt this thing. Okay.
Yeah.
So like the only one. So that's where I'm coming from. You know, even little kids will do something. And today I probably would still be afraid to do it.
Yeah, but that's totally fine. Like you don't have, like, that's the thing. Like I have that innate drive to get to work with myself in a sense so that I can manage. I'm not going to hang myself up if I'm not going to be able to walk a line by the age of 40, you know, it's not like, that's not where I'm at anymore. I might have done that earlier, but that's not where I'm at now. But it's really about what you learn in the process. And it's so much that you learn.
Yeah, I can imagine. Like, I can.
And eventually it's all somehow connected to yoga as well, just to bring it back to that, you know, it's like, and this is how I can see now that like yoga, fuck yoga in the sense of like, you don't have to have a yoga mat in order to practice yoga. Mm-hmm. You can, if you understand what yoga is really about, you can do anything and practice yoga. And I mean, you say you use meditation and yoga is nothing but meditation. It's literally one and the same, just that they started packaging yoga more in the like connected to the physical, to the physical activity of postures and exercises and stuff.
Right, because people want to look a certain way. They see these pictures. They want to be able to post their own pictures. They want to be able to impress their friends, whatever it is, right?
Yeah, what I came to understand why they would choose to package it in the way that they did is really to bring something invisible, something that's actually happening like in the unseen, to something tangible, to the physical body, so that it's something that you can sell, it's something that you can see. And it started with the Indian ascetics, what do you call it, like those yogis that sat on nails and I like did all these crazy things, and the Western, like the British going to India and seeing all that and seeing the benefits of it and wanting that power for themselves. And then the Indians then saw the opportunity to bring that to the West. Mm. But how do you bring it to a culture that doesn't believe in something that's not visible? You kind of have to find something that they can grasp, something that they know. And the body is something that we know. The body is something that we can work with. And that's why I think a yoga class can have tremendous benefits, in the sense that the setup of a yoga class gives you so much opportunity to teach all the underlying principles and all the underlying messages that we're actually trying to get across here. But again, the 200-hour yoga teacher isn't aware necessarily of all of these underlying, the nuances of the yoga practice, basically.
Right, you know? Right.
And then we get it wrong, and then we teach the wrong ideas to the people, which, then takes a whole lot of years again to undo.
It's a big mess, right?
But because the physical yoga practice, as we see it now, is mainly coming from where did physical therapy come from? Somewhere in the north of Europe, Sweden? Like,
I don't know.
Where they started with like working with the bodies, doing physical exercises to maintain the body. And then the sun salutation, I've heard or I've read, was really designed for the young soldiers of India and bodybuilders actually as well, to the sun salutation and the Ashtanga system was designed for young boys in India create discipline. And that's why they like to have their feet super close together and like everything needs to be tight. And then you have all these bendy postures because those kids, they were open enough. Like their hips was, they were sitting all day long, like on the, not all day long as we do today, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They had different Indian body types. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where this whole stuff comes from.
Yeah, that's crazy. And then you try to get a Western body into that. Yeah.
Forget about it. Right. So, and that's why for a Western body today, physical therapy in the physical sense might be much more beneficial to improve their physiology, but you can still integrate yoga principles into this. And that's what's happening a lot. It is what's happening a lot, especially with teachers who are more aware and more educated on like how the body functions. And we see it now, even I know that you know about the functional range mobility stuff and all of these new insights into the body's anatomy and how everything is connected, and that there's not just one muscle and one joint moving at one at a time, right? As you said at the beginning of the conversation, it's all connected. It's all connected. Mm-hmm. So if I move my arms and I open my arms, tendency is that if I'm not aware of my body, my chest is going to open and my back's going to arch. Mm. So how can I bring this awareness really just into the shoulder joint to open arms, but keep the spine neutral? And what does that do to my body? So it's not about right or wrong. It's about figuring out our body and how to improve it for everyday life. And it's not about touching your toes in a forward fold. It's about being able to lace your shoes until you're 90 years old, for example, or about being able to fall down on the ground and stand up by yourself. So yeah.
Let's talk about acro yoga. This is this thing you do. I don't really know anything about it, and I've never heard about it before I saw what you were posting. Okay, acro yoga. You have like, there's another person there. You're kind of like, how does this work? Like you're somehow like you're doing yoga with another person. Like you're holding someone else up in the air, or what is this?
Well, acro yoga. What you're doing essentially is acrobatics, I guess. Uh-huh. Just as you do in yoga, you do physical therapy and maybe some acrobatics, depending on what style you're practicing as well. Or gymnastics. Let's call it gymnastics in yoga.
Okay.
But in acro yoga, you do it with somebody else. And what fascinates me in acro yoga is, again, not the physical aspect in itself, but what we can learn in the interaction with another being. And it can teach us so much in the way how we interact with somebody else, especially as couples and lovers. It's insane how big the tendency is to just call out the other for what they're doing wrong when a pose doesn't work the way it's supposed to work. Like how right. We're instantly going into, stop doing this. Are you doing this wrong? Or are you doing this and that? That's why it's not working. Hmm. And in acro yoga, you have like a safe setup sort of to like put people's awareness onto these things. You don't have to tell them that they're doing that in real life. They eventually will, the seeds will be planted in the acro yoga class that they might realize that in a daily situation eventually as well. So it's kind of like a little bit disconnected to their relationship as a whole, but you still get to teach them maybe a little bit something about them and about their interaction and why some things might not work the way they wish it would. And so what I like to use then as a solution in an acro yoga class when this happens, and it happens all the time, is like, how can I step back when something's not working, when something's out of alignment, instead of just attacking the other, to step back and maybe look from outside, maybe ask the other what they would need right now in order to be able to support me more. So finding more of a cooperative language rather than just shame and blame. And it does a lot. Like once people start getting this way of communicating with one another, it's so beautiful to see how they start figuring out a pose step by step, respecting each other's fears and maybe insecurities. So yeah,
that's really interesting. That it makes me think about music. I mean, like what I've done in music, like as a pianist, okay, I've spent a lot of time working with singers, okay, so you have this kind of this relationship like that where there's, it's like we're trying to create something together here, and it's like every little thing that I do, I know, like it influences what the singer is doing. Okay.
Yeah.
And vice versa. And it's just this really tight connection, but it's like what you're saying about like blaming the other person when it doesn't work, when it's not right. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, you did something that's not what you were supposed to do.
Yeah.
Right. And then like that brings up some really difficult stuff. And look, the contexts that I've been doing that in are not, it's not a yoga class where it's like everybody's going there in order to, you know, learn and grow. And it's, you know, either in a professional context or at a school where it's like, I'm like the singer is a student who's training to be a professional. And it's like, there's a lot of pressure there.
Yeah.
Right. And like that, that would be cool if there were something like that. If it were something where it's like, it's just going to be about learning how to interact with another person.
And where would it be best to learn that than in schools and like in setups like this, right? But it takes,
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's not where the school system is at yet. So I think we have to wait a couple more years in order to have teachers who are aware of these things, how important these skills are, like in the modern world, rather than knowing how to like do all these weird mathematical things and knowing what rivers float through what country and whatever, not unnecessary stuff we learn in school.
Right. It's very externally oriented, like about, about achievement and accomplishment.
Yeah.
And,
you know, there's no personal growth. Yeah. Uh-huh, no, right. No understanding of characteristics and that we're different. And that we all have the capacity to deal with tricky situations. Like even this, I've observed my reactions a little bit lately when it comes to people speaking up against mobbing at schools, like speaking up and saying, let's just stop mobbing in schools. Let's just not accept behavior that is violating this no mobbing policy. So
wait, mobbing. This is a term I'm not. I don't know that term.
When kids are mean towards one another.
Yeah, bullying.
How do you bullying? Yes. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly. So it's all about let's not allow kids to bully each other.
Right.
Somebody who is a bully needs to be punished, needs to be put aside, needs to be taken out of the whatever. Mm-hmm. But we're not focusing on the kid that was bullied and giving that child a tool to like not be bothered by the bully. It's not about mm-hmm. the bully having power over you because they're using mean words against you. It's you giving them the power mm-hmm. as you believe them. So if we are not able to teach our children that they can choose how they want to perceive something, they can create their own stories about a situation, whatever way they want. If we can teach our kids that, then bullying wouldn't even be a problem. Like bullying can happen like anytime, anywhere. And it's not affecting you because it has nothing to do with you in that moment.
Right. But this is not politically correct. You can't push for that because they're going to say they call that victim blaming.
Yeah. What do you mean?
That's what they call it. If you say it's not the bully's fault, it's the victim's fault. Like they're the ones, they need to learn to stand up for themselves. That's a politically incorrect.
Well, yeah. Okay. Notion. The way that you're putting it, I can see how people can be offended by that because you are taking the side of the bully against the victim or against the one being bullied. Whereas mm-hmm. I think I try to make a different approach by not like, I'm not saying that what the bully does is like the right thing. It should be done no matter what, but it's important to teach children, like in general, not only when they get bullied, but already before mm-hmm. that they have a sense of that they have the power to live their own realities and to build mm-hmm. their own realities according to what works best for them eventually, what serves them most.
Yeah.
And what serves you most is to be able to just let some bullshit drop, like not taking up the anger or insecurity of another child as yours just because they throw it at you. Don't always have to catch the ball. If you don't like that ball, you don't have to catch it. Just let it drop. Not my problem.
That would be great. That would be fantastic. Right? It's like that would be wonderful. It's not going to be easy, I know, because that is, you know, bullying is not just done by kids to other kids. It's done by the teachers to the kids. It's done by the parents to the kids. It's done by everybody does it to each other, you know, and it's like, that's what the adults are teaching the kids. And so.
Exactly. And that's the twisted, fucked up shit. Like, okay, uh-huh. you're telling your kids not to bully each other, but you with like alongside even just mother, father are like constantly bullying each other. on a subtle, like, yeah, sometimes on the more obvious, sometimes on a less obvious.
Constant.
But kids pick up on that energy. Kids can pick up on that. Like, you don't have, like, you can pretend as much as you want, but kids pick up on the energy that you're putting there. And that's what we learn. And that's what then becomes our unconscious patterns, our unconscious reaction patterns. And I've just, written something where, like, how, sorry, I'm getting excited about this topic. why do we get so upset when somebody betrays us, when somebody has a little bit more fun with somebody else than they have with us when we are, for example, in a relationship?
Mm-hmm.
Why do we get so sad and so desperate when a person that was close to us dies? Like, these are just two examples. I don't believe that the way we're reacting and the way we're handling these situations is our nature. Like, it's not natural. It's not normal.
It's not
normal because it's what happens, because we've learned it, because we've seen it in our parents, we've seen it in our surrounding, we've seen it in movies. Like, we've been programmed to think that once somebody dies, we have to feel like we have to grieve. We have to feel very sad. And if you don't feel very sad, if somebody dies, especially, like, the closer the person is to you, the more you have to be sad. And if you are not, you're going to be judged by the others, because how can you not be sad when this person that you love so much now is away? Like, so even if you would know that you're not that sad, you would still make yourself feel sad because you know you have to. So these are just like, unconscious patterns that we've learned from growing up in the surrounding that we did.
Exactly. It's like every time that your parents model for you the idea that when somebody does something bad to me, it's a problem. Like, that's that's like, I'm the victim and they're hurting me. Like, every time they model that, like, that's what leads to the bullying, and it's what leads to the to the inability to stand up to it.
Yeah. It takes the power away from the kid being bullied, basically. Mm-hmm.
And you know, and the irony too, like, if zero tolerance policy for bullying, okay, and it's like that's the teacher bullying the bully, like, that's of course they're gonna
that's where you teach it. That, like, the most recent thing that is that like just portrays exactly that is the watch out your mouth, Fabs, but the Black Lives Matter movement. I don't know. Like, the way that I've received this was just out of this world. Like, I have no idea where it came from. It was in the midst of COVID-19, of this whole pandemic thing. All of a sudden, the virus was gone from the media, and everything that everybody talked about was this Black Lives Matter. And everybody jumped onto that wagon, saying that you must stand up for the Black people right now. If you don't do that, then you are no better than whoever. So
yeah, silence is violence.
Yes. And like, I've started seeing these Black pictures on Instagram, and I just like, and everybody starting to hashtag this Black Lives Matter. And I was just like, what's going on?
The Black Squares,
here?
You mean?
Yeah. I didn't buy it. So I sat back and I watched and observed, and I basically did that until it was gone again. I've spoken up once or twice, but not to the favor of that movement, I guess, or I suppose, because I've had people unfollow or block me on Instagram. Because I said something that they didn't like or didn't appreciate. And what I tried to say was really that by you trying to like force your opinion onto somebody else, like you're just doing what these people do that you want to fight against. So it's like you're turning basically into them towards those that are not in the same opinion than you are. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that makes sense right now.
That's the thing. That's the way it's like the game that everybody's playing is we have to figure out who are the bad guys and who are the good guys. Mm. And so it's like, well, if it's not you, then it's me. And you know, everybody is trying to figure out, you want to be on the right team. And you want to call out your friends if they're on the wrong team so that you can be, you know, that you look better in comparison. Yeah. And, you know, it's, to me, it's like it's not purely a bad thing because there's the energy that motivates it is good. Like it's because the Black Lives Matter movement, like it came up because people saw that there was suffering in the world and that people mm-hmm. were not, you know, they were at a disadvantage and so it, like, that's good. Okay. That's good to have that awareness.
That is totally fair. Totally fair. But it's not just about that one guy and about that mm-hmm. one like incident. That fact that there was this one hype event that was, yeah, so well recorded and documented and so twisted and weird. And on the other hand, that was like something I don't buy it. I don't know what it was, but there's like something in this whole story and in this whole movement that I'm just having a hard time buying into because it tries to eliminate fire with fire mm-hmm. eventually. And that's just not working. It will never work. Yeah. It will always just create more friction and newer friction. Yes. Yes.
Yep. It's the same story. I mean, I hope it moves in a positive direction. I mean, you know, maybe we have to do that. Maybe we have to fight fire with fire and go back and forth until that friction becomes painful enough, maybe that we become aware of a different way. I mean, that's like looking at my own life, like I've seen that kind of thing play out within myself, you know, trying certain strategies and then trying another strategy. Until I realized that it's the whole paradigm that needs to shift. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you don't know that until you're in enough pain that you are forced to look for something totally new.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So we learn this. How do we fix it? It's like, like deep, like things that are deeper, like not, in school, like learning how to look into ourselves
mm-hmm. and how to listen to our like gut instincts, like gut intuition, that inherent feeling of when something is like starting to be off and not being told that this is not how you should feel right now or mm-hmm. But it takes aware teachers in order to teach the kids. And I think we have to go for another generation in order to change that.
Mm-hmm. Going back to acro yoga, because it's
this. Oh yeah, that's where we left off.
That's where we left off. But I think it's related to this. Like, this is the same thing. Because it's like, totally. that's a way of connecting.
Everything is like, it's just different ways, different tools, different ways to look at things, but eventually it teaches us the same over and over and over again.
I wanted to ask you about like, because when I looked at the videos, okay, that you had posted about this, about acro yoga, like to me, there's something very intimate about this. Like you have two people that are in these poses, like there's something like that looks sexual about it. Okay. It's like, I could feel that in myself. Like, this is a little awkward. Like, I don't know if I would be so eager to sign up for that, like to be that close to another person. Right. And like, so to me, like, I'll tell you that's a barrier somehow, I think, like mm-hmm. to being able to move in that direction of having more authentic connections with people. Okay. Yeah. Can you speak about that? Like, is that something, do you feel that awkwardness when you do it, when you started doing it?
Of course, not anymore, because I'm used to it by now.
You're used to it.
Mm-hmm. But I definitely was at the beginning. And I think that's like what you're just saying is the one and only reason, not the one and only reason, but the one reason why this is of so much value. And that's why it's so important to get more confidence in like human touch and physical contact to one another, because that's another thing that is being taken away from us humans more and more and more and more. Like, we don't have this affectionate way of being with one another without being in a romantic relationship. Mm-hmm. Some cultures still do, like especially in the south of Europe. I'm pretty sure that South America has that more as well.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Like they're much more still comfortable in touching each other, even outside of a romantic relationship setup. Mm-hmm. It goes with the dancing. Like, they're used to like just dance with each other, and they can dance like the sexiest dances with no physical attraction to one another. Of course, there's most likely some sort of attraction sometimes there, but it doesn't mean just because they have this electricity or that connection going on through the dance that this means they have to spend their lives together.
Right. So they don't put as much, they don't put as much pressure on it, much weight on it. Yeah.
Exactly. So they just enjoy the moment and the experience that they have right there. And then they part ways again, and they don't ever have to see each other again. And it's just fine. Whereas us more Western Nordic people are much more closed up in that sense. Mm-hmm. And it starts within our families, I guess, already, that we're not used to so much loving touch within the families. Right. And then as soon as it goes into school, don't you dare holding the hand of another girl or even a boy, because when somebody sees you, it's like, ah, you got a girlfriend, you got a boyfriend.
Right.
And then making us uncomfortable, making us feel that this is inappropriate to do. Mm. So in acro yoga, what we're really trying to do is bringing people back into that childlike state of curiosity, openness, trust in another being, and putting aside this awkwardness, really. And it's incredible how fast you can break the ice in an acro yoga class. Like, usually the ice is broken within the 5 first or 10 first minutes through the warm-up exercises and the games that you play.
Wow.
People just like get out of their heads and into their bodies and their playful state. And it's just like, now team up, go with somebody that you just see, or there's not even really a choice. Like in school, when we build teams, you had to like pick, right? There was always like two kids building a team, and then each kid could like pick the kids that they wanted. It was always like the same one or two kids behind.
I know.
I was usually one of them because I was the tiniest, and like, yeah, I was never,
I never
strong.
Got picked. Uh-huh.
So in acro yoga, we try to like avoid that. So it's like a very inclusive feeling for everyone, for anybody. And then we just start building up the trust. We start building up the poses. We start building up the shapes of the body that you need to be able to hold in order to do that more advanced, the more trickier stuff. And then you just slowly, gradually build it up. And the beautiful thing there again is to bring in this idea of being allowed to say no.
Right.
And that's, I think it's another thing that we're not taught to say no enough, I think.
Right, we're taught to follow rules and
exactly.
expectations, and that if somebody's
so
upset,
if somebody asks you to do something, you say you usually do it, right?
Yeah, you
don't
be
consider yourself, and you don't check in with yourself first if this is in alignment with what you want to do. You just do it, and And so that's another concept that I like to bring across with the Acro Yoga classes. It's like you, and that's where the yoga comes back in. First, you need to know your own body. You need to know your own boundaries. You need to know where you're standing at a given time. And then if you come into interaction with another, you then know your boundaries and you can communicate them. So let's say you get together with a person that you haven't worked before, complete stranger, and maybe there's something in the chemistry that doesn't quite resonate with one another. You, either this person is like completely overconfident and just like super outgoing, and you are a person who's rather shy and timid and not so secure, you might not feel very comfortable with that person. Mm-hmm. And that person might want to like just throw you up in the air and tells you like, don't worry, I got you safe. So there is there is a tendency that we say, it's like, oh, okay, you believe in me. Okay, I think I can do this. And then you go and you do it and you might hurt yourself because you didn't fully trust still. Right. And it's really important that we start seeing that a no, like saying no to somebody's invitation, doesn't necessarily mean that we are rejecting that person. Mm-hmm. It's actually quite the opposite. It's actually inviting a sense of like, how, what do I want to say here? It's not rejecting them necessarily, but it's saying yes first to myself, to my boundary, to my fear. And then second to them, because I'm pretty sure they don't want to hurt us. Mm-hmm. So if through their overconfidence and our lack of self-confidence, they hurt us eventually, it might hurt them too in an emotional way because they didn't keep us safe.
Right.
So it's like a no can also be a yes in that moment. And then you know, you can check in, you use your communication skills. It's like, okay, hey, look, I don't feel comfortable doing this right now with you. How about we try this other exercise that we just previously did just to calibrate with one another on a safe ground? And then when I feel comfortable with you, then we can potentially like move up to the skill that we're trying to do now, or that you are trying to get me to do because you have so much confidence in me.
It's interesting that you say like this dynamic, like I think plays out in regular yoga classes where you have the students who are being instructed by the teacher to do something. And it's like, I don't want to displease the teacher. Mm-hmm. I don't want the teacher to be disappointed in me or to whatever. So you're trying to take care of the feelings of the teacher, and that causes you to disconnect from yourself. And like, this is where people get injured.
Fuck yeah. Like, yes. Yep.
And so the teacher is trying to protect the student from injuries by giving them more and more specific instructions. Yeah. But it's like, look, I don't know, you know, maybe you should just back off and, and let me be with my body.
Yeah. And you know, the funny thing there is like, we are taught that. I think most 200-hour teacher trainings do teach poses in stages so that you have like a very beginner phase and then you move it up to a little bit more intermediate position and then to the full expression. So we call it the full expression. So already that, I think, by itself is like it's a mistake. Because then you obviously give the student the impression that if they're not in their full expression, they're not doing it right, or they're not getting the full benefits of this pose. And so even though the teacher, the beginning teacher might be able to know the stages, might cue you through the different stages. Okay, now put your foot there. If you feel comfortable here, go there. If you feel comfortable here, go there. And then the teacher stays in that full expression of the pose in their most beautiful position they ever, like, they can create, looking beautifully while the whole class is struggling, just trying to like stay in this position of this full of expression, not feeling allowed to really go back, you know? So what I do in my classes is I always guide them through But at the end, like they can come all the way to the full expression. But before I hold the pose, I ask them again to be honest with themselves and to go to the position, to the variation where they felt most comfortable and most stable in, because we're going to add on to this. So you want to make sure you have a strong foundation first. And then I go back to the first expression. So I go back to the first stage of this pose to give the students really the permission to actually stay there as well. So, nice.
Yeah. So that's and good. I think you're that's you're setting it's a good important. Example. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just because they always do the people just do what the teacher tells them. It's how it's how we are wired.
Well, we were bullied as kids,
said.
You know.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what you said. Like, we are wired that way. And even if we feel like there's something quite off, but we then it's like, oh, it's probably just me, or oh, it's just probably because I haven't been working out so much, or it's probably just because whatever, right? I haven't taken enough magnesium. That's why my wrists hurt. It's like, no.
Right. Yeah. That's what it's all, that's what it all is, right? It's, that's this whole thing, this whole industry, you see all of it. It's just, it's ways that people can say, ways that they can blame themselves, you know, more things that they can look at. It's like, this is something I need to be doing. I need to be doing this and this. And it's, I don't, you know, I don't want to, I don't, if the teacher tells me to do something, I don't want to interrupt the class. I don't want to ruin the experience for the other students. I don't want to make the teacher feel bad. I don't want to make the teacher feel incompetent. Yeah. You know, I'm not going to say I don't take magnesium or whatever, because I don't, I mean, I'm not going to blame myself for it. I'm just going to say I don't want to mess up the experience for other people. That's how I look at it. But it's tough. I mean, it's, this social programming is just so pervasive, and we learn it at such a young age. It has to be corrected there, I think.
That's true. Yeah. But again, it needs to be corrected there. But in order to be able to correct it there, it takes aware adults. It takes adults that have gone through that work, that have like that have had this insight and this understanding, not just from books, but from actual life experiences.
Yeah.
So
life experiences.
Yeah. And I think I don't post enough of Thai yoga massage. I think you haven't really seen that. Like, if you would see that, then you'd get really intimidated by physical touch.
I did that once.
What do you mean you did that once?
I did it with the Thai yoga massage. I did it once.
You received
a class, hold on a second. Is there a difference between Thai yoga and Thai yoga massage what was it called? It was called Thai massage. Maybe. I don't remember what they called it. I don't know if these are distinct.
But you were massaging another person?
No, it was a class for couples. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So I went with girlfriend and
you massaged each other.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is a
slight difference.
It was
intense. It was kind of a workout, actually. It was not easy.
There is a little bit of a difference between Thai massage and Thai yoga massage. So this is like the next level, I find, and it's so interesting as well. How fast and how much more respectful strangers are with one another when they work together in a Thai massage class or Thai yoga massage class compared to couples, and how couples tend to already have their prehistory and they already like, he's probably going to push so much already. And he's probably going to do this move and that move again.
Mm.
And in the communication and interaction, there's a lot more tension going on compared to complete strangers having like this super close connection, like this physical full presence, full touch experience that is so, so new to so many of us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been so uncomfortable for me at the very beginning, yet it changed my world. So after I did the yoga teacher training, I came back. I did a little bit of acro yoga back in Canada as well. Randomly with some random dude, and it was fun. I didn't understand what it was really, but it was fun. And then I saw a workshop happening here in Switzerland. I just read Acro Yoga and I signed up. Boom. Not knowing that there's different styles of Acro Yoga. There's Acro Yoga Lunar and there's Acro Yoga Solar. So the more yin aspect with the massage and the therapeutic parts and the whole compassion, loving kindness, all this kind of stuff. And then you have the solar part, which is more acrobatic, more about handstanding, more active, more show-offy, basically, if you want that. And I ended up wanting to go to solar, like handstanding, doing fun stuff. I ended up in a setup of Thai massage and acro lunar stuff. And I've never felt so much love and so much presence of another being, like a stranger especially, than I have on that weekend. And I felt so bad for myself that I've, like, with all these years around my parents and my family and everything, like, this was just not something that we gave each other in that way. And that actually led me to go more onto the path of Thai yoga massage before I then returned back to yoga and acro yoga in the more active way as well. So yeah, it's been an interesting journey for
sure.
And I guess you learn a lot about the physical body when you start massaging different types of bodies as well. So that definitely helped me understand the physiology of each person a little bit more.
Because you're touching people directly and you're really getting
and you're really closing, like working closely with them. So when you do a move, they will tell you directly if it's something that feels good or if it's something that is painful for them. And then for one person, one move feels like so releasing and so yummy and so good. And then you do the exact same move on another body and it feels just painful and tense. And so you start becoming aware that each body is just like so different and that there's no such thing as like a one fits all yoga class. So all level yoga classes are bullshit unless they really teach from the beginning the freedom for each individual to move their body as they wish in that yoga class.
Mm-hmm. It's so much like the way music is done. It's the same issues. Like it's people are different. Everybody's at a different place. When you're learning something, you can't, like, you just have to be, like, you have to be where you are because it's the only place, like, that's the only place you can move from. It's like where you are. It's like if your mind is somewhere else, you're trying to be in some idealized, you know, you want some idealized configuration of your body. Like you can't do that. And it's just, everything gets out of sync and it's just a big mess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anything else that we want to talk about?
I don't know what's on your paper.
I want to talk about
so many more things. I can talk for hours.
I would love to go more in detail, more in depth about some of the more interesting things there, but that
maybe we find another time.
Conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's interesting. It's always interesting to conversate with you anyway. So I appreciate that.
You too.
I definitely appreciate that. And I appreciate that you're taking the time to really, bring these kinds of like opposing ways of looking at things also.
Like, yeah. I think it's important. I like to do it anyway. I don't know. It's fun, you know, it's fun to be a little bit confrontational now and then.
No.
Well, thank you, Fabi, for having this conversation with me.
Thank you. You're very welcome. Yes. I hope we can continue somehow, sometime.
Yeah.
That would be really fun.
We'll do it again. All right. Thanks for listening. You can find more details about Fabi and whatever else she's doing. I'm going to put that on the website, michaelcorman.com. If you like this podcast, please rate it, review it, whatever you have to do. I don't know. do it. Apple Podcasts, I guess. I don't know. Wherever you can find a place to rate it, just write something, because it's look, I love to read these things, okay? So you'll at least be entertaining me. I'll talk to you next time.